This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Joining us on the SDCCU Fan Hotline, one of my favorite managers I've ever had the opportunity of playing for, Donnie Baseball. Don Mattingly joins us on the Gwynn and Chris Show. Don, how are you doing today?
Good, fellas. Hey, I appreciate that, Tony. I love that. You want to be a guy that guys like playing for.
I think you fit into that box very well. I want to talk a little bit about your ball club. You guys are playing some good baseball. Won 9 of your last 13. What have you seen go right for this ball club in these last 13 games?
As much as anything, you know, all year long our pitching's been pretty solid and given us a chance to win games. Had trouble scoring runs early. And then that pitching almost went to another level there and been kind of keeping teams down and giving our offense a chance to get going. And we started getting some big hits. As much as anything, we started getting some big hits. The next thing you know, we're scoring and winning games. And you know how that goes with a team. Confidence, yeah. You know, just breeds confidence. And next thing you know, we're starting to put a little string together.
Don Mattingly is with us on the SDCCU Fan Hotline. I have to kind of hold up a little bit when I say that because, Don, if Tony Gwynn Jr. says you're one of his favorite managers ever to play for, you're one of my favorite players ever to watch play. So I'm a little starstruck at the moment. I loved your career, and it's a great honor to have you on the show. So thanks for joining us. Talk a little bit about your career and how do you impart some of your stuff to this young team, or do you try and keep that stuff separate and play manager more than former player?
Well, number one, I appreciate the compliment, and I think you use everything, you know, in your career. You use experiences that you've went through in your playing career. It may be a time when you struggled. It may be a time that stuff was going on in your life. Depends what's going on with the players. But I think you try to use everything to put these guys in the best position. If you're seeing something offensively, a lot of times I'm going to try to work through the I'm working through the hitting coaches and the voices the same, so we're not getting all, you know, jumbled thought process for the guys. But you try to use everything that's kind of went on and use it to the best to help these guys.
Don, when in your playing career, you're one of the better hitters of your era. Rolling through that time. I'm sure you look out in today's game and see how much different the game is played. I think you and I had a conversation a couple years back ago. I think we were talking about the swing path and how there's nobody really with a flat path anymore and everybody's trying to get the ball in the air. What are the things that you try to talk to your guys about or the organization's philosophy, really, about hitting and what you guys are trying to do as a ball club offensively?
Yeah, I think our organization has been pretty solid with we're not necessarily a club that says we're going to try to get the ball in the air. And I'm not a guy that's against getting the ball in the air. I like our guys hitting homers. But I like the path that stays in the strike zone. And that's more of a flat path. And that doesn't mean you don't get the ball in the air to me. It's just a situation. You got to be able to put the ball in play.
Right.
And for me, I look at all the stuff that's went on over the last 3 or 4 years, when we start talking about getting the ball in the air, and you feel like that same group of guys that's saying, hey, we got to get this ball in the air. You got to get that, you know, we got to elevate. And then they walk into the other room and they talk to the pitchers and say, hey, throw the ball up because nobody can hit the ball up when they're trying to hit homers.
Exactly.
So it's like, it's the same group that's trying to do both things. Right. And it's hard to have it both ways. So in general, we're looking for guys really that can absolutely just hit first. And trying to find those guys that have always hit. We feel like those guys will develop power. We play in a big ballpark. We're going to be trying to find speed and guys that are athletic and be able to play to our ballpark. But we don't mind the homers, but we feel like we got to find some guys that can just flat out hit first, and the power will come with that.
Don Mattingly was a guy who could flat out hit. There's no question about that, as Tony said. And also the power came, because I think you're still in the record books, Don. Home run in 8 consecutive games at one point during your career. That was a bit of an oddity to the way you swung it and won your batting titles, but you had your power stroke from time to time. Do any of these guys remember anything about the 1980s, 1990s New York Yankees? Or is it like talking Greek to them when you go back and and talk about, you know, Steinbrenner and all the stuff that you went through?
They know about the Yankees, that's for sure, and they know about Steinbrenner. I try not to ever bring my past up as a player, and players are smart too, right? They're going to Google you. So I figured, hey, let them find out on their own. In general, you know, I think they relate to baseball. And if you can relate to them, because I've never forgotten how it felt to be going 0-15. The times change and the game is a little different. But the one thing that stays constant is that player's mindset. When he's going bad, he's feeling bad. And you got to try to relate to that and get to that understanding. So I don't want to forget the feelings, and never want to, you know, get into the conversation with guys about all the good old days, because those days are gone and it's not coming back, to be quite honest with you. So we got to relate with them and just get them to be the best players they can be.
I think those out there listening right now, you just got the secret for what makes a player enjoy playing for a manager. Not Don simply saying that he hasn't forgot where, you know, what that feels like to be 0-15. Oh, that means a whole lot to those guys in that locker room. Don, I want to ask you a little bit about...
Although I'm surprised he knows how it feels to go 0-15, because I bet it didn't happen too often. I got to be honest.
It happens. Trust me, it happens to everybody.
It happened.
Don, I want to ask you a little bit about Derek Jeter. It's hard for me not to look out on the field watching you guys play this year, whether it's at home and you guys are missing the big orange, I don't know what you called that thing, out in left center, and there's just more of a Yankee feel to what's going on. You guys have gotten rid of all the bright colors in the uniforms. What kind of impact has Derek Jeter had in his organization so far?
I think a huge impact, T. Derek knows what he wants. He's said from the beginning he's committed to this club and building it from the ground up. He stayed true to everything that he's talked about, you know, spending money in international, building our minor league system. He's, you know, Derek's straight up, and he expects us to play the game the way it's supposed to be played, play hard every day, and he don't want to hear about we're not supposed to win, right? And I agree with that. You got to go out and play to win every day. You have to have a little patience with where you're at. But Derek's been solid, and it is a little bit of a Yankee feel, to be quite honest with you. And even him, I remember one day he said to me, he goes, you know, I feel, you know, it feels like, you know, everybody's like, oh, we're going to do everything the Yankee way. I'm like, gee, it's not so bad, right? It's work.
Right.
And why you want to just feel bad about that, right? That's what he knows. That's how he grew up, you know, the way the Yankees do it in the minor leagues and things like that. And you have to change with the times, that's for sure. But that basic foundation of work and attention to detail throughout your organization is gonna stand the test of time, and Derek is solid with that.
Well, Don, we certainly appreciate you lending us your time and coming on the show today. I'm gonna try to get down there and see you before this series is over. But if I don't get to see you, good luck the rest of the way. And again, thanks for coming on.
All right, guys, I appreciate it.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Let's find out what's happening with your San Diego Padres.
That's a fair ball. Call fair over the bag at first base.
It's time to go inside the clubhouse on Friar Friday, right here on Gwynn and Chris, on your home of the Padres, 97.3 The Fan.
It is Friar Fridays, and we are very happy to be joined here on Gwynn and Chris by Padre left-hander Matt Strom. Padres Petco Park getting set to take on the Miami Marlins this evening. Matt, how are you doing? How's everything? I'm sure you're glad to be back in San Diego.
Yes, very happy to be back. It's a great feeling every time we come back here, so excited.
Even after a trip to the Big Apple, it's still like, no, let me get back to San Diego.
Big Apple's a little too fast for me, so I'd rather just walk the chill streets of San Diego here downtown.
All right. Matt, I want to talk to you a little bit about your start so far. I mean, early in the season, you had your first start as a starter.
Yep.
And you struggled that first start. Yep. But since then, man, you've been lights out. What changed from that first start to, I guess, really the second and beyond?
Yeah, you know, that first start, kind of sat here opening weekend, and I had 4 days to think about it, and I tried to do all my work, tried to think. I just overthought it way too much, and I talked with Balls immediately after that outing, and I was like, dude, I just need to go back to my reliever ways of this guy right now, attack him here. Who cares about the second, third time through the lineup? I need the out now kind of mentality, and, you know, just kind of flipped that switch and gone on from there.
It's worked out great. I mean, I think you've been pitching as well as anybody in the rotation. Your confidence level has to be sky high right about now. You're feeling very good about all your pitches and feeling comfortable out there, yes?
Yeah, no, you know, I try to stay as level-headed as possible. Don't get too high on the ups and don't get too low on the downs. You know, again, just one pitch, one batter at a time, and that's how I continue to go about it.
You mentioned having to revert back to your – reliever mentality.
Yeah.
Expand on that a little bit. What exactly does that mean?
You know, as a reliever, you know, you're coming out of the pen in a situation where it's now or never kind of thing. You know, you don't have the second time through the lineup to set somebody up. You're not going to bait somebody on certain pitches. I want to get you out as quick as possible. We got a great defense here. We got gold all over the infield. I want you to swing before three pitches. You know, the lower my pitch count, the further
right.
I can go,
yeah.
And the longer I can save that bullpen we got out there. And they're great. And they're, you know, the fresher we keep them, the more fun we're going to have throughout the year.
Do you feel like as a group of starting pitchers, you guys have some limitations in terms of the pitch counts and the things of this nature? I mean, every guy probably wants to go 9 innings, I'm thinking. And you guys don't really get that chance very often, at least not at this young point in your career.
Yeah, so, you know, all of us are competitors. We all kind of got sat down in spring training, and we're kind of given the layout right there that there are going to be restrictions on y'all this year, and that's just the way it's going to be. So I think all of us have done a great job of just accepting that, especially as competitors. I mean, you want to win, but you may not understand it in the sixth inning when you're taken out. But you got to look at the big picture of this team, this organization, and the years to come. So, again, you're going to see some guys frustrated, but we've all accepted it. We understand what they're doing, and we just got to trust them.
What is managing, I guess, your expectations like with all of that in mind, knowing that it's probably going to be some type of innings limitations to you?
Yep.
How do you manage your own expectations, and how do you work about actually, you know, getting better in those areas that, you know, they're trying to be cautious about?
Right. So, like you say, they're trying to be cautious, and all I'm trying to do every time out is to show them there's no reason to be cautious.
Gotcha.
So, you know, I want to go out there and throw 6, 7, 8 innings and then them look and see, okay, he's fresh 5 days later. You know, right now we're kind of on that six-day rotation type thing, but, you know, each one of us want to show that we can do a 5-day rotation. We can do that. And all we can do, I mean, you can pout all you want. That ain't going to get you anywhere. So all we can do is just go out and just show them that we're able and we're capable of all this stuff. And, you know, just hopefully we switch their mind.
It's working out great lately for Matt Strom joining us here on the SDCCU Fan Hotline on Friday or Fridays. Just real quick, I want to go back to, you said being in the Big Apple, being in New York, pretty fast there.
Yeah.
I want people to understand, this is a young man from not Fargo, North Dakota,
right,
but West Fargo, North Dakota.
Don't get that wrong.
No, I wouldn't dare. Tell me about how a kid grows up in West Fargo, North Dakota, where it's probably snowing, at least in my mind, 10 months out of the year, and makes it all the way to the major leagues. And that's a heck of a move.
Yeah, no, it was 98 degrees there yesterday. Mom sent me. They're sweating, so it's one extreme to the next. But, you know, it's something I've always wanted to do. Ever since I can remember, I've always wanted to play professional baseball. And I was very fortunate. I had two parents that they believed in me as much as I believed in myself, and I've never had a plan B. I left high school, went to a junior college. My main concern class-wise there was what made me eligible to play ball in the spring. Guidance counselor at the time didn't really like that too much, but I told her I'd figure it out. I told her I'd figure out plan B when plan A was over, and continuing to play baseball. My parents did everything possible for both my brother and I to have this opportunity. So
I mean, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, you've been betting on yourself this whole time, so it makes a lot of sense. That's what got you here, right?
There's no room for plan B in the back of my head right now. It's filled with plan A.
I want to hit you up a little bit, because I'm down here often. I'm here early, so I get a chance to watch you guys take BP.
Yeah.
And it is very unusual to see a guy come from the American League and be able to handle the bat like you. I mean, right now it looks like you might be the best of the starting five out there. Where does the presence with the bat come from?
You know, I've always in high school I could swing it a little bit, but again, playing in North Dakota, you never really see pitching. I mean, we maybe had one guy throughout the state that was blowing guys up with velocity, and I talk blowing guys up, you're blowing guys up with 86 in North Dakota. So you know, it wasn't you're not getting anything. Actually, you remember Ballinger from spring training? He was a North Dakota kid when I was playing high school, and he was a lefty throwing 90 at the time, and we were all,
oh my gosh,
scared. It was like I don't want to get in the box against this dude. So, I've always been able to swing it, and I told my junior college coach his biggest regret would be not letting me swing it in college once I got traded here. I told him I was going to prove that to him. So a lot of BP with my dad growing up. So,
well, there it is. Life's lessons from Matt Strong. Go with plan A. Stick with plan A.
Yes.
Until you achieve plan A.
Exactly.
And just to finish up, tell us a little bit about the day that you got a call or got the word from a scout that, you know what, plan A is working. We want to bring you into professional baseball.
Okay, so from when I got drafted or when I got called up?
A little of both,
Okay, when I got drafted, it was actually, we were sitting down in the basement. I was playing video games with my brother, and we kind of had the draft playing on the background just because, I mean, you know, the late rounds
are all
within a minute. I'm not a top-round pick here, so the 21st round, everything kind of happened real quick. I just remember playing video games and heard my name, didn't know if I heard my name, and I was like, wait a second, I haven't got a phone call, maybe. And then like 3 minutes later, I got a phone call from the scout, Matt Price of Kansas City, that they had drafted me, and he'd fly out and we'd talk the next day. So that all got taken care of then, but my call-up was kind of weird. I got called up to AAA the night before. We were on the road. The clubby drove me back to our AA home place, which was 2 hours away where we were playing. And right when I got to the field, I got a call from the AA manager telling me I can't go to AAA right now. I got to stay in the clubhouse, and he'll call me back. This was at 10 in the morning. He told me to call me back. And I'm like, all right.
Something's wrong.
So I sat, and the trade deadline was right there, too. It was like July 28th. And so I was calling, and the Royals were in it but not in it kind of thing.
Right.
Kind of going for it. And I just called my agent. He heard nothing. And he's like, just sit still. So I chilled there, and next thing I know, it's noon. Then it's 3 o'clock, then it's 5 o'clock, then it's 7 o'clock, the AA game starts, and I'm like, well, I'm not getting a phone call.
Right.
So I'm sitting in AA locker room all by myself, and game finishes up, and I get a call from our AA manager, and he says, hey, there's a plane taking you to Arlington. I wish I could tell you you're going to debut, but he's like, we have no clue yet. You're just going to kind of be on taxi squad. We'll figure it out when you get there. So flew in the next day. I called my parents. It was a noon game in Texas. I left Springdale, Arkansas.
Probably 120 degrees.
Yeah, it was hot. And so obviously getting the news late at night, called my parents. Game was in like 14 hours. They weren't going to be able to make it there. So they just jumped on a plane to head to Tampa because it was getaway day in Texas for the team. Wow. And then, I get to Texas, still don't know if I'm going to play. Finally, the news of the player that we were waiting comes back, and about an hour and 10 minutes before game time, I was told I was going to make my major league debut, and then I went out of the bullpen, seventh inning stretch, came into, got about halfway from center field to the mound, and they started God Bless America, so I had to stop right there. And then,
that's nice of you to do.
The rest of it was kind of a blur. I faced two hitters, and then that was it. So.
Wow. What a story.
That is a story.
All right, I got a plan B for you, just in case. I think you can write a travel guide about all the little tiny cities that you've been in.
Yeah.
Fargo, Springfield, Arkansas.
Springdale.
Springdale.
Yeah. Well, Springfield, Missouri, and then Springdale, Arkansas. Yeah.
So
yeah.
You probably been a wall. Something like that. But hopefully, we won't have to worry about that for a decade or so. Just
for
keep
sure.
doing what you're doing right now. It's working great. So fun having you on the program, and continued best of luck.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor. Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
Gwen and Chris wanted to rank things, and that means whatever they want.
Come on, don't get weird.
They bring you their top five of the day because it's time to start the countdown.
Yes, indeed, it's time to start the countdown. It's only fitting that we do our top five NBA Finals series, considering we just had game one of what I think is going to be a terrific series between Toronto Raptors and Golden State Warriors. Chris, why don't you go first?
I will. Thank you. I didn't jump on it too bad. I still stepped all over it, but not as bad as I usually do. All right, my number five all-time NBA Finals probably wouldn't be on anybody's list except for mine. But if you're a Chicago Bulls fan, you got to put the 1991 series against the Lakers in there. It was the only time.
I'm sorry.
I know you left that one out. But it's the only time the Magic and Michael went head to head. I mean, you've never had such star power in an NBA Finals. The series started off great. Perkins hit a three-pointer to win game one. The Bulls came back at home to take game two. Game three went to overtime. Jordan made some unbelievable plays to win that game. But then by the end, and right, the famous Jordan shot where he switched hands was in that series. But by the end, what happened was both James Worthy and Byron Scott got hurt by the second half of game four. So they were out for that and game five, and the Bulls end up winning their first championship. But that, if you're a Bulls fan, and I am, that has to be in your top five because it was just the star power in that thing was incredible.
That made me think about the text that Thomas sent us through Twitter today on direct message about how the Orlando Magic deprived us of our one matchup of Kobe Bryant and LeBron James by upsetting
right.
the Cleveland Cavaliers that year in the conference finals. What we could have witnessed at that point, we'll never get a chance to see. But my number five actually has to do with LeBron James. It's the year he was able to bring back his squad from a 3-1 deficit against the Golden State Warriors. The 2016 NBA Finals, I think we all remember the iconic block that really changed, really turned that game completely around. Kyrie Irving would go on to hit a big three-pointer to seal the deal, and they would pull off what everybody thought was impossible to do against the Golden State Warriors, who, by the way, had beat the Bulls regular season records for wins that year.
Yes, they have.
And because LeBron walks away with the title, nobody even talks about it. It's almost like it didn't even happen.
I know, it's funny. And if it wasn't for that Cleveland victory, Golden State would be sitting on four titles in a row right
yes.
now, going for five. That was a great series.
Number four.
My number four series you're going to like a whole lot better than my number five. Because I got the Lakers over the Bad Boy Pistons in 1988. And I am telling you, this was a knockdown, drag-out war. Because that's the way the Pistons played, and the Lakers matched them. And the thing that made this series great and interesting was not the series so much, but what happened the year before. The Lakers had won it in 1987. There had been no repeat champion for 20 years, and Pat Riley stood up at the parade and said, "Next year, we're going to win it again." He guaranteed that they'd go back to back. Well, the Pistons made them work awfully hard for it. It went seven games. Detroit led 3-2. Game six, Isaiah Thomas put on one of the most incredible displays in NBA history.
On one ankle, what?
On one ankle. He scored 25 points in the third quarter. But the Lakers still won that game. And then behind James Worthy, they took game seven, 108-105. It just, you know, two great teams. The Pistons would win the next two after this one. The Lakers won the previous two before this one, but that collision was awesome in 88.
And you know what set that up was, because remember, at this point in basketball, the East was considered like the tough guys. They beat up basketball, and the Lakers had already been through this with the Celtics. They had shedded that soft kind of moniker that everybody had put on them, and they had already become this mature team. So this battle you're talking about was two teams that wanted it like that at that point, that late in the year.
That was basically a seven-round fist fight,
yeah,
that the Lakers won in 1988.
My number four, I think you'll like this one, and this was one of my favorite finals. This was Chicago Bulls versus the Phoenix Suns. I think we all remember Mr. Paxson knocking down the big jumper in game six, I believe it was.
To win it.
That's when the tide started to turn for me, at least, for Michael Jordan. Like, I was always rooting against him, because especially after he had beat my Lakers in the 91 finals, I was rooting against him. But then you started to see why he was so good. He was willing to give that ball up right there when, I think at that point, nobody thought that that was going to happen. Nobody thought he was going to give the ball up at that point. Because up until that moment, he had been taking all of those shots. But to give it up right there when it mattered most, things started to change, at least my opinion about Michael Jordan. And clearly, he's still the best player to ever do it.
It's a fantastic series also, Tony. It featured a 3-overtime game in Chicago that Phoenix actually won to stay in the series. Barkley was playing for Phoenix against Jordan. He was the MVP. Phoenix had the home court advantage, so that's why Chicago had to go in there for game six to win the game. And as you said, it was Jordan and his teammates that set up Paxson for the winning shot.
Number three.
All right, number three for me. Another one you're going to like, Tony. 1985.
We have the same three.
The Los Angeles Lakers beat the Boston Celtics 4-2. This was amazing because of what happened in game one. They still, to this day, in Boston, refer to it as the Memorial Day Massacre.
Yes.
The Celtics beat the Lakers in game one of this final series.
Ran them out the gym.
148-114. And then the Lakers came back and beat them in game two, took the home court, had to go back to Boston for game six. And keep in mind, the Lakers had lost to the Celtics in the finals like 15 times prior to this. And in game six, they exercised all the demons of the Boston Gardens. Kareem hit all the big shots. Magic made them all. And the Lakers took the series in six. But, man, you talk about Super Star Wars, man. The Lakers and the Celtics in the mid-80s, it didn't get any better than that.
You get a chance, watch that 30 for 30 on it. It is all I can hear is Magic's voice. Larry's gonna kill you!
You got to watch that 30-30 Lakers-Celtics if you're any kind of basketball fan at all.
So you said that was the Memorial Day Massacre?
Yes.
So that means that they actually played the finals like on Memorial Day, right?
They started in late May, yeah.
Okay, so it didn't extend into the end of June like they do now.
No, they got it out of the way a little
okay.
earlier.
Okay.
I don't even need to go. Mine was also the late 1985 championship, Lakers versus Celtics, after losing the year before to the Celtics when Magic basically choked it off because he didn't even get up a shot a couple different overtimes.
Right. Yeah, I do remember that. All right.
Number two.
All right, number two for me is one you brought up already. I thought the 2016 Cleveland Golden State one deserved to be a little higher than you did on the list. Here's a couple of reasons why. Number one, as you mentioned, the Warriors won 73 games that year. Number two, Golden State won the first two games of that series by a combined 48 points.
Yeah.
You talk about blowing them out. They killed them in both games and then went ahead 3-1. No team has ever come back from 3-1 in the NBA Finals except that Cleveland team. And I don't know if you remember Game 5 in Oakland, but both LeBron James and Kyrie Irving scored 41 points and pulled off that victory. And then it came down to Game 7. And one thing I did not know, but going into Game 7 of that series,
It was the only time in NBA history where both teams through six games had scored the exact same number of points. It was 6-10 to 6-10 going into Game 7.
And that's after two blowouts.
After two blowouts. So Cleveland came back and got even and then won the game on the Kyrie three-pointer. That was a great series.
Number two for me is, we're going back to the well, ladies and gentlemen. The Lakers versus the Celtics in 1987.
Okay.
This was the capper between that era of Lakers versus Celtics. The era before, Celtics dominated. Now you get the 80s, and finally the Lakers are able to win another championship, to get one more than the Celtics did in that particular era. At least between those two teams. I think the Celtics won some when those two didn't face off against each other.
The Celtics won in 81 and 86 against the Rockets, who snuck in ahead of the Lakers.
In 86 that year, that's right.
But the other years, the Lakers had the edge on the Celtics. But 87 was another classic. Leading to number one.
Number one.
Number one NBA final series of all time, and I feel a little vindicated because I actually looked up online a list of the top series of all time to just see where mine compared, and the list that I read put this number one also. It was the 1984 Celtics beat the Lakers. Sorry,
that's
Tony.
Definitely not on my list.
I know you forgot about it, but look, you had every player in both lineups is in the Hall of Fame. Bird, McHale, Parrish. Ainge isn't in the Hall of Fame, but he could be. Dennis Johnson's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
The Lakers side, you have Kareem, you had Magic, you had Worthy. You had Byron. I mean, unbelievable seven-game series all the way to the wire. DJ hit a game-winning jumper in Game 4 overtime. That was after Magic didn't get the shot off,
that's
as
right.
You mentioned. And that was also the year that they played Game 5 in the sweltering heat of the Boston Garden. 97 degrees with no air conditioning, and the Lakers thought Boston was cheating like a thief. And they've turned up the heat. Red Auerbach and the Ghosts were turning up the heat. Anyway, we can't do it justice. Watch the 30 for 30
about those
Lakers-Celtics series in the mid-80s, because that's the greatest basketball ever was.
No doubt. Number one for me, I took a little different tact on this one. My era, 2010, okay. The Lakers took on, of course, the Boston Celtics, Kobe Bryant.
Another seven-game
would
series.
Would get this ball clip to a game seven. This is 2 years after the Lakers got pummeled in a game
six
in
Boston. Yeah,
they didn't meet the next year. As we say, we were deprived of a Kobe versus LeBron in 09, but in 2010, the Lakers would get their matchup, and Kobe would get his win against the Celtics in a game seven. That's my number one finals, and that's our countdown.
The countdown is now closed. Sometimes there's just not enough time in the day to talk all the sports we want.
I feel reborn. I'm like a phoenix.
Settle in and saddle up. The Big Five starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, Big Five is brought to you by EcoWater Treatment Systems for anywhere you drink water.
You notice how every time you read one of those liners about anything like the Strike Force tickets, Scraby lays a whole bunch of traps out there. I don't really understand.
He does. He does leave traps out there.
I mean well, because I think I should go fix this right now because tomorrow I'm going to forget, and then I never do, and then there it goes.
Do you not read it over when you do it the first time?
I do, but I'm. Is there a word for dyslexia, but like with words?
Dyslexia.
Like, yeah, okay. All right. No, I thought that was letters. I thought that was letters.
Was there another side?
No, I thought that was like letters in like the order of the letters in the word, but I'm talking about words.
Yeah, I think it's all the same.
Yeah, I think there is a word for that. It's hopeless.
So,
is the word.
Well, let's get to it.
Number five.
In one of the most shocking events ever.
Oh, man.
At the 94th Scripps National Spelling Bee, eight spellers were named co-champions. Like how Tony says, oh, yes. Thank you, Thomas. Hit me with that one more time. Thank you, because it was that crazy. Each person... Yes, it was. Each person correctly spelled a word in the 20th and the final round, and Bee pronouncer Jacques Bailey told them, quote, champion spellers, we are now in uncharted territory. We do have plenty of words remaining on our list. I call fakeness on that. But we will soon run out of words that will possibly challenge you. The most phenomenal collection of super spellers in the history of this competition, end quote. Rules state that no more than three spellers can be named co-champions, but they actually went and just changed the rules on the spot, which is kind of weird to me. But the organizers did actually do something cool and gave each of the eight spellers the $50,000 prize. So, Tony, if you were one of these eight, would you be able to call yourself champion?
Yeah, didn't they, like, break the dictionary, basically, last night with the eight of them? I mean, I saw these guys, I saw this group of kids. I can't remember what show I was watching, but they interviewed, and they were talking about how they study. First of all, this is not your regular spelling bee. They're not just looking up words in a dictionary. They're looking at word patterns and all kinds of craziness that I didn't even know existed in a spelling bee. But, yeah, I think they all should be able to call themselves champs. I know this kind of fits into this world that we live in of everybody gets a trophy thing. But, listen, when you're spelling words this difficult and you're having a hard time finding other words that can beat them, why not?
I mean, I call shenanigans on them. I think they just ran out of words. They're like, no.
I think they did, too. I think clearly they did.
What do we do?
Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, I think you're going to have a national investigation into this to make sure that this never happens again and that they have some proper overtime rules put into place in case there's a tie next time so that they can figure out a way to tie break it. Is it just me, Tony, or would it be that hard to just go to the next word until you finally get down to one kid?
Literally,
or would they be there all night?
That's what I would think, but that also leads me to believe that they come with a set amount of words that they're going to use,
and
not expecting anybody to get
them all right.
Yeah.
They called it at 12:05 a.m. Eastern time, so way past the spellers' bedtimes.
No, it's not past the spellers' bedtimes, because if you know these kids, they stay up till all hours memorizing,
studying
every one of these words and their origins and the whole
thing.
It's crazy. It's a crazy world, I'll be honest with you.
Now, why is it that every single sports outlet that I went to this morning had this on their headlines? Why every year do we get so excited about the spelling bee?
I think it's a cool time to highlight some kids that are working hard. It's become a national thing now. Like every year, the spelling bee champ gets some about 15 seconds of pub from the TVs.
At the end of a newscast, once a year, they announce Mickey Mouse's birthday. It's a fake rodent, for heaven's sakes. We do things like that in this country.
You know, my favorite spelling bee moment of all time is when this kid, I was showing Will this the other day, he was up on stage, they gave him the word, and he gets so excited, he goes, "I know it! I know it!" And then he proceeds to spell it wrong. And they go, "No, sorry, kid, this is not right," and he goes, "No!"
Well, that's a scraby moment is what that is.
That was the most amazing spelling bee moment of all time. All right, let's move
that's
to number
hilarious.
Number four. More and more colleges and conferences are lifting the ban on alcohol sales in universities and their athletic events. This time the SEC has done it. They announced yesterday they will begin to sell booze. The conference's new policy, which opens another revenue stream for its member schools, goes into effect on August 1st. But the policy does not require all the schools to sell alcoholic beverages, which will be limited to just beer and wine, but leaves the decision up to each school. According to the release, the new policy will require, quote, the establishment of designated stationary sales locations, a restriction prohibiting sales by vendors in seating areas, a limit on the number of alcoholic beverages purchased per transaction, and designated times that sales must cease specific to each athletics event, end quote. Pretty much they're just following kind of a pro model except for selling the beer in the seats. Chris, is this a slippery slope for universities?
A little bit, but my main question is, does the SEC really need another revenue stream?
Yes, apparently they do.
I mean, are you kidding me? Do these people not have enough money already from all of the television deals that they work and stuff? Scrape, you can speak to this better than I can as far as drinking is concerned, but you know what? Why do we all have to feel like we have to have a couple of beers to watch and sit and be at a sporting event? I think if you kind of learn that you can get – I think if you learn in college that you can go to a football game and not drink beer, that might be the way you just go about it as you get older. Why? So I am calling a bit of a slippery slope on this one, yes.
As a recovering alcoholic, I think that if you are able to handle your drink, then and you're going to have two or three, then fine. Why not? If you can't, I can't take away someone else's right to drink alcohol in the stands. Now, if you can't handle your drink, then I don't think this should be something that is going to be happening at all, because colleges are known for people getting up at 6 in the morning and just getting messed up. And that's exactly what this is going to be. So I think it's a little bit of a slippery slope. But, Tony, what do you think?
Have you guys watched an SEC football game, by
the
way?
It's crazy.
They're already drunk.
Either that, or they don't need to drink because they're already crazy enough.
I mean, this has just made it easier for them. I mean, the tailgates, first of all, at SEC.
Yeah, you can't stop
nuts.
That.
It's already happening.
Go ahead.
Was that a screaming moment right there?
Yeah. When I was in college, we called getting up early something. I can't repeat. I don't know why I opened my mouth. Sorry.
Hey, look, the Aztec football team played games on Saturday nights. That gave us all day and night to tailgate.
Yeah.
Believe me, I know all about it.
I don't think it's a slippery slope because it's nothing that they haven't already been doing anyway. You actually will be able to possibly control it better in the stadium because you can card everybody. You can sneak alcohol in through those tailgates at these games all the time. Believe all of us. It has happened all the time. It's been happening for years. So I don't see it being a slippery slope, although I do agree with Chris. Does SEC really need another revenue stream? Come on now.
I don't understand people that are able to go anywhere and not have a drink. I really don't understand it. But in college, isn't that the fun of it?
That is the fun of it.
It would be nice to learn that you can also have fun without having to have a drink.
But that's the thing, is that I don't necessarily believe that people are doing it just to have fun. There are adults out there that enjoy to and like you said, like to have two or three drinks, and they can call it a night and it just be that. But obviously, when you're dealing with young adults, there's a learning curve that has to happen. So
learning curve is a great way to put that.
That's just the inevitable part of it.
Oh, I had a really steep learning curve. Let's go to number three.
Number three. There it is.
The Cleveland Browns were thrilled when they landed wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr. from the New York Giants in an offseason trade, alleging they were content with all aspects of who OBJ was. That was all well and good until Beckham started missing organized team activities, a common offseason habit of his. And then the tone kind of began to change because initially the Browns head coach Freddie Kitchens dismissed Beckham's absence, but that went away earlier this week when he continued to skip practice. And when Freddie Kitchens was asked about it, he said, I just want to see him. What did he miss? A lot. The offense. That's all he said, Freddie Kitchens. So, Tony, is this a bad look for Odell?
There's two sides to this, right? Because, as you said, Cleveland had to do their research on this before they made the trade.
He never goes to these.
It's not as though he's just kicking it at the house having some beers. He's working. But in this particular case, I'm actually okay with Freddie Kitchens' criticism because it is a brand new team. Yep. It's a brand new offense, brand new quarterback, brand new teammates. And this is the time of year. I mean, I hate to compare the two, but the guy that's made the most noise last year, he's in minicamp with his new team, and that's Antonio Brown. He's out there trying to make those. And it's important from that standpoint, from a camaraderie standpoint. There's no doubt in my mind that Odell Beckham will know the offense come week one, will know what he's supposed to do. But there is an element of camaraderie that he is missing out with his new teammates. I'm sure his guy, Jarvis. Is there right now. So I don't necessarily think it's a bad look for him, but it certainly isn't something that he's doing that's helping him thrive in his new environment.
Chris, is this a bad look for Odell Beckham Jr.?
Where did he go to school again?
Louisiana State University.
Did they allow drinking at sporting events?
Not at the time, no.
But they do now.
Apparently so.
Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
I was like, wait, is Odell drunk somewhere?
Yeah, that's what I was referring to. I think that Tony's right. This isn't the best of looks for Odell Beckham Jr., but I really, in the end, don't think it matters. I think the coach has to be critical of it, because if he's not critical of it, what are the rest of the players going to say?
That's a very good point.
Like, if he doesn't say, hey, he's missing a lot, well, the rest of the guys are going to go, well, what are we doing here then?
Very true.
The day that a guy skips mini camp and is then benched at the beginning of the season because he was skipping mini camps might be the day that guys start showing up to mini camps. But Odell Beckham Jr. knows darn well that when that bell rings on week one, he'll be in the starting lineup whether he shows up to this stuff or not.
I mean, all they say is just go deep.
Listen, if that day happens, that either means the collective bargaining agreement has been changed or they are just going to clearly break the collective bargaining agreement, and then there's going to be a whole lot of other issues that come of that.
Let's go to number two.
Number two.
The Toronto Raptors seemingly not only have the overwhelming support of Canada as they take on the Warriors in the finals, but the United States as well. And Warriors star Draymond Green has a theory as to why that is. Here he is talking about it.
I love this.
You know, people in the States are rooting against us because we beat all their teams. So it's all good. You know, when you're at the top, no one's ever cheering for you to stay there. You know, people want to see you get to the top and they want to see you fall. That's just kind of the mind of the most human beings. So it's all good, but yeah, their team's sitting at home with them.
That is a good
motivation.
Very good quote. Chris.
Yes.
Do you agree with Draymond Green?
Yes, I couldn't have said it any better. I could not have said that any better. He's used his Michigan State degree, if he has one, wisely. And he's very well spoken on that particular subject. He's right. Nobody cares or roots against the Atlanta Hawks.
He's the way he cares.
Right?
I forget they're there.
Yeah. So, you know, he's right. He's absolutely right. When you're the champ, there are people. There's some people that jump on your bandwagon and root for you because you're the champion. But I think more people root against you when you're on top. And that's
cough.
That's why they say that it's hard to get there, but harder to stay there. Because everybody, you got the target on your back.
Tony?
Yeah, I think Draymond is spot on. Draymond's usually spot on when it comes to these type of things.
Yep.
You might not like the way he gives you the answer, but he's definitely spot on. Everybody's upset on this side because their teams have been just really beat up. They've been bullied by the Golden State Warriors over the last 5 years. Because I remember it wasn't that long ago that LeBron James was sitting in this very same seat and everybody wanted to see him leave because he was tired of him seeing him in the finals. And their best criticism, well, he's like a 500 player when he gets to the finals. Well, he's been there a lot. And as Draymond really put it well, that, you know, in this society, we love to build you up, but we like to see you back down, too. And then we like to see you back up again. That's just how it is.
Let me also add one last thing to this thing about Draymond Green and the Warriors. I just want the Warrior fans who are on top of the world to realize that there were about 30 years there that went
least,
by where nobody rooted against you.
Yeah, right? That was because, my team growing up.
Because that's how bad the Warriors were for a long, long time. So
how happy was everybody when they upset Dallas as the number one seed
that's
that
right.
year?
That's right.
That was the greatest
everybody
thing ever
for them that year. Right.
Do you guys think, real quick, last question about Draymond Green, do you think Drake is the stupidest man alive for trying to fight Draymond after the game, or the smartest? He's getting in his head.
As Draymond said, there was no skirmish. We just talked. There was no pushing. There was no shoving. There was no throwing.
I clearly saw him call him trash.
That is just called good banter.
Hmm.
If that was if that was Gary Payton, that conversation would have lasted so much longer, and it would have just been a whole lot of back and forth, which I appreciate. Drake has the upper hand right now because his team is up.
Yeah, the Warriors didn't make the playoffs here for like 15 yeah. straight years.
Right. So All there right. was a long time where nobody cared.
Last one.
Number one.
The Los Angeles Clippers are expected to be one of the major players in free agency this summer. However, the team is in a little bit of hot water following some recent comments by head coach Doc Rivers about soon-to-be free agent Kawhi Leonard. Today, the NBA actually fined the Clippers $50,000 for violating the league's anti-tampering rule for comments made about Leonard during a recent appearance on ESPN. Here is the clip that got him in trouble.
What we really love, Doc, is that he plays both ends of the court and he makes always the right read.
He is the most like Jordan that we've seen. Like, there's a lot of great players. LeBron is phenomenal. Yeah. KD is phenomenal. But when not that he is Jordan or anything like that, but he's the most like him. Big hands, post game, can finish, great leaper, great defender, in between game. If you beat him to the spot, bumps you off. And then you add his 3-point shooter, you know. So, you know, I never get in that who's the best player. You know, Magic is the best player. You know, Michael Jordan was the best player. LeBron, but it's that same group.
Those are the comments that got them fined. So, Tony, do you think this is tampering?
No, I think it's not tampering, but I find it ironic that the guy that led him to that water right there was Magic Johnson.
Oh, good point.
Hey, Doc, why don't you talk a little bit about Kawhi Leonard?
I find that to be hilarious that he is the one that sets that whole thing up, and then Doc just jumps right into the pool. He was just giving him a compliment.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But listen, this is also the environment that Magic has created. The Lakers and Magic have created. Now the NBA has to be almost overly sensitive after fining the Lakers three or four times. They got to play this across the board straight now because mm-hmm. they've decided to actually fine teams for these type of comments. They have to be consistent now. And I think Doc Rivers, unfortunately, is just a casualty. I mean, that was very, very, very light, as are all these fines. Now, how is that an issue for the NBA? But reportedly LeBron being able to talk to Kawhi on the phone. I know they're players and they communicate with each other and it'd be hard to stop that, but that's just as much tampering. So although I kind of chuckle when I because of this situation because it involves the Clippers, I don't necessarily think it's that fair.
Chris, do you think that was tampering?
No, it was not tampering in any way, shape, or form. It was as much tampering as it would be if, you know, Doc Rivers was coaching a game against the Raptors and Kawhi Leonard walked by and he said, man, you're a great player. I mean, I don't know what else you're supposed to say when somebody asks you about Kawhi Leonard. How could he answer any other way?
Like, I mean, you know what, Magic? I can't answer that. Sorry. Nobody wants to do that.
Right. The NBA's got an issue with this whole tampering thing, and that's because players have supposedly gone out and recruited other players, but why don't you just embrace the fact that that happens and stop punishing everybody for trying to do it? It's obviously going on anyway. It's not hurting anybody. The players are going to wind up playing where they want to play. And there's nothing wrong with a bunch of teams trying to recruit Kawhi Leonard at this point, I don't think.
All right. Good stuff, guys. Tony?
That's all for the Big Five from Gwynn and Chris on 97.3 The Fan.
Joining us, an old friend of mine. Used to work here in San Diego.
Indeed he did.
And was one of the great writers we had here at the Union Tribune, now a radio.com sports insider. Rick Bucher, how have you been, Rick? It has been a while.
I'm good. Let's just emphasize friend rather than old, okay?
Yeah, you're right. Fair point. Rick, great to talk to you again. And let's just obviously get right into last night's game. What did you make of Toronto? Was it them that played maybe a little bit better than people thought, or did the Warriors have an off night, the 10-day layoff? How did you kind of rate that game one?
I was stunned that the matchups played out the way that they did. Probably Pascal Siakam, obviously the big game, but I was really curious. I thought that he was going to be an X factor as far as, can he be what he's been, or is he going to be is the stage going to be too big for him? Yeah. Obviously, it wasn't. And so my daughter just came in to alert me that her practice is at a different time. It doesn't matter that Dad's on the phone, so I apologize for that.
Oh, good.
In any event, when I looked at it, when I watched the results, I was stunned in the discovery that, looking at it, the Raptors have more one-on-one defenders than the Warriors do. And I don't know when was the last time that we could say that. And watching Pascal Siakam go by Draymond Green, watching Kawhi Leonard go by Andre Iguodala, I mean, those are arguably two of their best defenders, Klay Thompson being in the conversation. And I said it from the beginning of the year that I thought whoever came out of the Eastern Conference was going to win the championship. I didn't know who would knock off, if there was anybody who could knock off the Warriors in the West, but I thought everybody would take a piece out of them, and riding the same horses to the end was finally going, the price was going to come due. Now, the fact that they were able to get past Portland as quickly as they did, and I thought, okay, this is a little bit different. They've gotten their rest. They've gotten a chance to get everybody healthy. This is going to be different. But at this point, I'm looking at the matchups, and they look like they favor Toronto to me.
Rick Bucher joins us on the SDCCU Fan Hotline, Radio.com Sports Insider. Rick, what did you make of the matchup of Nick Nurse deciding to put Kawhi on Draymond Green?
Yeah, well, I think in some ways it was a matter of, one, knowing that Draymond Green really is a key. We don't think of him as a scorer, but he is a playmaker. And I think as much as anything, it was a matter of, you know, Draymond's probably not going to run around a lot. He's not going to be a catch-and-shoot guy. And trying to preserve Kawhi, because clearly he came into this series injured or at least hampered, I believe it's a matter of how can we minimize what he has to do at one end, still get something out of him, but not force him to run around, since it appears that there's something going on with the, as they say in hockey, a lower body injury. We don't know exactly what it is, but there's something going from the waist down.
Rick Bucher joining us, talking about these NBA finals. Rick, all right, so you're not surprised that the Raptors have the early lead in this series, but what is it going to take for the Warriors to come back here, and do they need to come back and win this series to cement themselves as one of the all-time great teams, or does that tag go away should they lose this series to a team that I think most people think is inferior?
I think winning five, going to the finals five times in a row, winning three championships, you qualify as a dynasty. If we're going to give the San Antonio Spurs, and I don't know where you guys are, to me, winning back-to-back is the achievement that the Spurs never were able to do, and that I would have a greater question about them than I would about this Golden State team. So I don't think they need it. I think that you know, if they do win it, then it cements them as arguably the best team in the modern era. But outside of that, I think they still qualify as one of the best that we've ever seen.
Rick, do you think Kevin Durant makes it back for this series? Because I've seen this injury. I've had this injury before.
Yeah.
It's not an easy one to come back from, especially be at 100% in the little bit of time that he's had.
I agree with you, and I have to tell you, so Chris Haynes, who I know well, and I know he's tied into the KD camp, he's the one who said that KD could come back midway through this series. The injury happened May 8th or 9th. I know that this past Wednesday was exactly 3 weeks. I was told that it was going to take 3 to 6 weeks for him to come back. And when the Warriors said it was more serious than they thought, I thought, okay, it's going to be closer to 6 than to 3. And his ability to play in this series at all was going to be jeopardized.
Yeah.
Now, game three is just, you know, it's not that it's 4 or 5 days away. As of recently as yesterday, I was told very small chance that he plays in the series. And so, you know, again, it's always hard to tell in terms of injuries, in terms of risking it. I will say this. I wonder if this would have come out. This is what I'd make of what I've heard and what we have out there, is that they lost game one. KD desperately wants to play. He always wants to play. He hates missing games. They lose game one, and he wants to expedite matters and is saying, I can get back. I can play. And there has to be a decision now made. What do we risk that? Do we run that risk? And I will say, Steve Kerr surprised me in game one, because I didn't think we'd see DeMarcus Cousins either. And not because he couldn't play, but because he wasn't in NBA final shape. And I would say that the 8 minutes that he played proves me correct in that. He doesn't look like he's ready to play in this series. But what it told me is Steve Kerr is willing to put all his chips in the middle of the table to try to get this done. So will the Warriors stand in the way of KD wanting to take a risk? Because I think, as you know too, it's really easy to re-injure this if you come back too soon.
Much like a hamstring.
Yes, exactly. So that's the risk that they run.
Rick Bucher is with us. You may remember him in San Diego. He's a great writer with the San Diego Union-Tribune, now radio.com sports insider, covers the NBA as well as anybody has over the last couple of decades. And yeah. I'm sorry, Rick, didn't mean to date you, but you started when you were young. You started when you were young. What can I tell you? You started when you were young.
You still got good hair like you're young, though. I tell you that.
No kidding, man. He always had that. That was totally unfair. I used to hate hanging out with him because it was just a blowout in the hair category.
What do you mean? You were my wingman. Stop it.
That's all I could be. All right, I've got a couple seconds left. How badly did Klay Thompson travel, just for fun?
Oh, well, you know, it's funny because I'll say this. I've seen worse, but yeah. In talking to referees, it's funny how they have said you get the gather, right? It used to be you got two steps in the NBA. It was one and a half anyplace else. It was basically a gather and then another step. And then the NBA basically said, we're going to give you a gather step, and then you get two more. And so it is called differently in the NBA. He got, by my count, he got three gather steps and then three more steps.
That's right.
So there was a lot there. But you know what? It ultimately didn't make a difference in this game. And I'm not sure it's going to make a difference in the series.
Rick, great talking to you. Great catching up with you again. I hope we have a chance to talk some more down the road. Continued great success to you. Very proud of what you've accomplished in your career. I knew you'd be good, and you have been. And thanks so much for being on with us in good old San Diego.
Chris, Tony, appreciate it. Thank you very much.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.